Welcome to the Conscious Millionaire Show, Season 12, Episode Number 3154. Welcome to Season 12 of the award-winning Conscious Millionaire Show, the world's number one podcast on conscious business and performance. With over 3,000 episodes and millions of listeners worldwide, this is where founders and entrepreneurs become ultra-performers. I'm your host, J.V. Crum III. If you're ready to scale bigger, profit more, and create impact that truly matters, you're in the right place. This season, we're building a global movement of ultra performers, the new heroes of business who are breaking out to create bold new possibilities for the world. Subscribe now and share with your team, because this is the season you break out and become an ultra performer. What if you could become an ultra performer? Operating at the top 1% of entrepreneurs. Find out how in the Conscious Millionaire Manifesto, Achieve Your Impossible. Inside, you'll discover the three keys to mastering mindset, strategy, and execution, so you scale faster, profit more, and step into your next level of performance. Download now. Go to consciousmillionaire.com/manifesto. It's time for you to step into your ultra-performer future. Hi, this is JV, and I'm so excited you join me. As you know, this is much more than a podcast and syndicated radio show. It's an entrepreneurial training, especially for you. And if this is your first time checking out Conscious Millionaire, a big warm welcome. I hope it is an amazing return on your time. And if you're a longtime listener, thank you for checking out this featured episode. Either way, you can subscribe absolutely free by going to ConsciousMillionaireShow.com. Now, help me welcome our featured guest. He's the co-developer of NLP, also known as Neuro-Linguistic Programming, and conducts NLP seminars, workshops, and trainings internationally. He has continually developed new human change technologies for the past 50 years and has authored numerous NLP books, including Get the Life You Want, Persuasion Engineering, and the Secrets of Being Happy. He's also generated copious amounts of music and art that can be found on his streaming site, NLP Eternal. I've personally trained with Dr. Richard Bandler, and I'm honored to have you on the show today as my guest. Welcome to Conscious Millionaire.
It's a pleasure to be here again.
Again?
It's nice to see you again.
Well, it's been so long since you have been here. Today, we're going to talk about boundless optimism, how to adapt, how to overcome fear, how to find greater purpose, how to get up in the morning and you're excited about your day rather than sitting there. I have a member of my family, we actually haven't spoken in 3 years, who gets up every morning, as she explained to me, to turn on the television to find out what to worry about all day long. I explained
to her.
Well,
that's a good place to look for it.
That's absolutely it. And I told her, actually, there were other options, but she didn't want to hear about those options. But we're going to talk about those other options, because if you're an entrepreneur, getting up in the morning to worry all day is not going to be a good utilization of your time or your energy or your emotions. And it's certainly not a good utilization of your future. Boundless optimism. I'll turn it over to you.
Okay. Boundless optimism is my goal with all of my clients. Remember, for some 50 some odd years now, I've taken clients from psychologists and psychiatrists that have been given up on by just about everybody. And when they come to me, the one thing they don't have is boundless optimism. They don't have much hope. They come in and they tell a story that they probably told 50 times, you know, about, you know, why they're stuck the way they're stuck. I discovered early on in my career when I started doing business consulting that it wasn't much different, that even though they weren't coming in telling me they were depressed, they were coming in telling me they were stressed out, and then how they thought about the same kinds of things over and over and over again. You know, the what if this, the what if that, the what if this. And the currency of living is how you spend your time. And when you make pictures of potentially bad things and then feel as if they're happening. Jealousy is a really good example. People imagine somebody they love sleeping with somebody else and then feel as if it's actually happening. And, you know, sometimes it is, sometimes it's not, but it doesn't seem that worrying about it helps in any way whatsoever. You know, you either find out the truth, right? Or you find out that you don't care, or you find out that, you know, you're not willing to risk it, in which case you make a decision and it saves you enormous amounts of time. A lot of the CEOs, and in fact, I was talking to one yesterday, you know, was trying to make a decision about starting an online business. And, you know, he's been going back and forth about this, he told me, for over a year. They have everything created. They spent all the investment money, but just to launch it, you know, he's worried that, you know, something might not work and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, instead of figuring out how he's going to become the person that gets up in the morning and finds any flaw and fixes it and gets the right people to do the right things to monitor it, you know, that if you look at something as opportunity, you have a big picture where you see yourself succeeding and you feel drawn towards it. This would be a really good exercise for people to do, is to take something they worry about a lot and instead shrink that picture down and make a big picture and see themselves in it, succeeding.
Let's do it right now. Let's do it right now, Richard, because I know one of the biggest problems everybody I talk to is it doesn't matter what's going on in their business. They just typically don't have enough leads, right? Because that's a cog that's in many businesses' wheel. So let's take that's the negative. That's what they worry about. I don't have any leads today.
Well, if they don't have any leads, they're not asking where they are, right? Because they're there somewhere. There's, good Lord, there's 5 billion people on this planet. And out of that, X number of them are qualified to buy any service or any employee. I get this from people who learn NLP. They go, where am I going to find clients? And I'm going, there's no shortage of crazy people on planet Earth, right? You just have to motivate them to want to come to you, which means you have to figure out some cost-effective way to be able to advertise them. The internet's been made that a lot easier for people, but you have to find out how to connect with the people that will become leads and find them and find sources that can funnel you leads. And you have to imagine in the future and see yourself being the person that every day is coming up with 3 or 4 new ways to do this. And if you saw in your mind yourself succeeding at this and you look at it and you feel that you want it, you spin that feeling faster and faster till it becomes something that you absolutely have to do, to the point where anytime you start to have a doubt, it craters under the size of this image, because you make this image 4 times bigger than the one you're worrying about, the absence of leads, right? Where you see yourself sitting in front of the telephone, not dialing it. You know, if you don't dial it, no one answers, right? And if nothing else, you can go out in the world. When you're waiting in line at the bank, when you go to the supermarket. I walked up to somebody in a supermarket one time and I said, you look kind of depressed. And they said, well, things haven't been going that well. And I said, just handed them my card. They became one of my best clients, you know, sitting there buying melons. You know, every single moment in your day is a chance to connect with someone. And the only thing that gets in the way of people is their own hesitation. They don't look at everybody and they go, Look at that person out there. There has to be a reason why they would want to give me money. You know, it's not realistic, it's optimistic. See, some people are going, is the glass half full? And some people are going, is the glass half empty? I'm going, where are the rest of the glasses? And when you ask that question, you end up building boundless optimism so that you start looking at the world and going, where are the answers? Not where are the limitations. See, in the meta model, which is the first questioning model that I developed, which is a problem solving machine, I just re-released it in a book called Problem Solving. And in it, no matter what sentence comes up, there's always a question you can ask. And the question is, which one is going to get you the best? And so when people say, well, I can't do this, you can ask what stops you, or you can ask what would happen if you did. And when you ask what would happen if I did succeed, what would happen if I found 1,000 leads in the next month, right? Then you can imagine it happening and then start to reverse engineer how you go about it, where to look, who to talk to. And remember, reinventing the wheel is never a good idea. Go to people who have succeeded at these things and find out what they did. Every retirement home is full of them. There are CEOs sitting around in retirement homes that would like nothing more to talk about how they succeeded and every kind of business you can imagine. When my mother went into care, I used to go in and talk to all these old guys that ran corporations. One of them, one of the guys that I met one time inadvertently had been a CEO that went in and fixed corporations for Bank of America. He went into one corporation where they did tape duplication, and they were way in the hole, millions and millions of dollars. And he fixed that corporation. And then he fixed another corporation, and then another one. And then the ones where they do these windmill things. And when I met him and I had talked to him about it, I had started asking him, I said, what exactly did you do to take a corporation that's, you know, financially going backwards? And he said, well, he said, I reviewed all of the contracts to find out what they were doing that made money and what they were doing that was costing money, not because of the product, but because of the cost of customer acquisition. And he started rewriting contracts so that they wouldn't make cassette tapes for a music company unless they bought 10% of the amount of albums they made, which meant they were buying a lot of tapes they might never use, but he was making money. And it ended up in the end making cassette tapes more available all over the place, and the cassette market went up. And there are inadvertent results to boundless optimism. That, you know, everybody said people only wanted albums. They didn't want cassette tapes till they were readily available. And then they started putting them in their car and everywhere else. And then ultimately they came up with CDs. And, you know, then CDs, they got to sell all the same music over again. What a great idea. Keep changing formats. You change the format, you get to sell the same thing again. And, you know, my computer does it all the time now. They call them updates. And, you know, if you don't have all the updates, your equipment doesn't work right. And some of them are free and some of them cost a lot of money. And to me, some of them are worth it and some of them are not worth it. Our job is to persuade people that they're worth it. But if you don't have any people, you have no one to persuade. And they're everywhere. Even if you're reaching out online, you have to figure out how to connect with just the right people. You have to know that if there's a conference somewhere and everybody is there studying something and it has to do with your business, you can go on Facebook and have every one of those people receive an ad on Facebook just because they were at that conference at that time, at that location. And if you don't understand that kind of stuff, you have to need to send somebody to educate you about it. Because the problem is not the problem. The problem is ignorance of how you go about things. If you don't have enough leads, you're not finding out where leads come from. You haven't asked, how does somebody have way a lot of leads? You know, where do they come from? Where are they coming from? It's not just from an ad on Facebook. It's from a targeted ad, because you want that cost of customer acquisition as low as possible. So you have to talk to just the right people at just the right time.
So it seems if you're boundlessly optimistic, you're really in the business yourself of creating possibility and noticing possibility, that you're in the possibility world business. And you and I were talking before we went online about adapting, and especially in this past pandemic that we had, there were companies that just thrived and there were companies that went bankrupt. And that was really the exercise of optimism and possibility and adaptation. How does someone get into that state where they are adaptable, they're resilient, and they're constantly looking for more possibility?
Because it's all about what questions you ask and the tone of voice in which you ask them, you know, because if you go, this is horrible, this is going to ruin everything, I have to space my customers and my restaurants out 10 feet apart, right? And which means I can only have 10% of the capacity that I normally have. And nobody wants to go outside because everybody's afraid they're going to get sick because the government's lying to them, you know? And if you look at it that way, then you're headed to destruction. But if you ask the question, how can this work for me? What can I do to make my business bigger, not smaller, so that as the epidemic disappears, I get back my old business and a whole brand new one? You know, some people started delivery. Some people, you know, went to DoorDash, and every business had to do that in some way. Many of us went on Zoom because we couldn't, you know, it was an invitation to be there when nobody was going to be there. You know, if I put on a seminar, nobody was going to show up, not to mention the fact they wouldn't let me travel to most places. Even when you got your inoculation card, there were all these countries you couldn't go to. Some of them, they wouldn't even let anybody outside. So what do? I went to Universal Studios and broadcast. I put a number of people in an audience, all spaced out 10 feet apart. Every third row, I had three people in an auditorium, taught a class, and on camera demonstrated what to do, and had hundreds and hundreds of people in Italy and Germany and all of these places watching, because, you know, I just said, how can we make it work? You know, under these circumstances, how can we make it so that we can give people something they can't have? Because what was missing, if you can't go out of your house, then the food's got to come to you. If you can't come to my seminar in person, then I got to find a way to bring it out to you. And fortunately, we have the technology to do that now. Technology will provide us lots of answers, but they have to come from the right questions from inside your head. The reason I wrote a book about problem solving was to teach people to ask good questions, because if you ask the wrong question, you get the wrong answer. If you go, how long can I survive this situation? That's just the wrong question. Questions are like knives. They slice your thought patterns so that they move in one direction and not in another. And when you ask the wrong question, then you get stuck. Psychologists, if somebody came in and said to them and went, I'm depressed, they would ask them about what? When it really, who cares? It doesn't matter what they're depressed about. It's the machine that depresses their thoughts that you would need to understand so you can get it to do something else. And, you know, when I look at somebody and go, well, how do you know you're depressed? Maybe you're happy. And they'll go, no, I'm pretty sure I'm depressed. And I go, well, how do you know you're depressed? And they'll start telling me how they think. You know, and when they tell me how they think, I can get them to think different, because if you change the way you think, it will change how you feel and therefore change what you're capable of doing.
We're here with Dr. Richard Bandler, who's the co-developer of NLP. We're going to be right back. We're going to continue our conversation on boundless optimisms, and we're going to address those fears you're having right now and how you can dissolve them and just move through them. We'll be right back with Dr. Richard Bandler.
What if you could become an ultra performer, operating at the top 1% of entrepreneurs? Maybe you're at six figures and ready for your first million, or you've built a seven-figure business and now it's time to leap into eight. The Conscious Millionaire Manifesto, Achieve Your Impossible, is your blueprint. Inside, you'll discover the three keys to mastering mindset, strategy, and execution. The levers that transform entrepreneurs into unstoppable forces who scale bigger, profit more, and create impact that truly matters. I'm J.V. Crum III, founder of Conscious Millionaire, author, and after two exits and $75 million in revenues, I've written the manifesto for founders like you, leaders who know they're meant for more and are ready to achieve it right now. And as a listener to the Conscious Millionaire Show, you get special access today. So act now. Go to consciousmillionaire.com/manifesto. That's consciousmillionaire.com/manifesto. Again, go right now to consciousmillionaire.com/manifesto. Download your manifesto today and step into your ultra performer future.
Welcome back. I'm J.V. Crum III. I'm the host of the Conscious Millionaire Show. I'm here with our featured guest, Dr. Richard Bandler. I want to tell you about something he has special. It's the NLP Eternal. It is this backlog of all these programs that Richard has done. I've trained with him personally. I'm a member because it is such an incredible deal. I want you to go look at NLP Eternal. We'll have a URL for that on the show notes at consciousmillionaireshow.com. And that's right. Now it's time for the 24-hour challenge. Richard, what's the challenge you have for everyone listening today?
Well, my challenge to them is to think of something about what they do in their business that scares them. And then to answer the following questions. Once they think of it, when they feel afraid, question is, does it spin in their body this way? Does it rotate this way? Does it go clockwise or counterclockwise, right? Once they notice that, see if they can literally make the picture in their mind bigger and spin it a little faster and get more afraid. Because this little test will tell you how to take control of your fears. Because if you can make it worse, you actually can make it better. You can slow it down and spin it in the opposite direction. And here's a little trick. Put a border around the thing you're thinking about that you're afraid of. The minute you do that, it switches it from one hemisphere to the other. And if you look at yourself being terrified, typically you won't feel so terrified. Most of the time when people look at themselves being afraid of taking a chance, going and talking to some potential client, going and making a presentation to Walmart or somebody, when they think about it and they look at themselves being terrified and stuttering and all that stuff, they look at it and they go, that's really stupid. And when they do that, they get to laugh. Then you get to make a new picture of how you'd like to be when you're there. And if you can reduce your fear, and in fact, if you can reverse your fear, it becomes something where you start to become boundlessly optimistic. Because I get people who are terrified of spiders to hold a tarantula in their hand in less than 20 minutes. And I do that just by changing the pictures in their head and spinning their feelings in a different direction. And the next thing you know, the thing that was most scary in the world, they're doing it. And I tell them only one thing about it. Holding a spider is not important. Knowing that you can do anything that you think you can't is really important. And this is why we need to set challenges like the ones you have your every guest come in and put up a challenge for people to do. You need to try things that you haven't tried to get smarter. That by definition is what it means to get smarter. Trying new things and deciding this works and this doesn't work. If it doesn't work, don't do it anymore. If it does work, do it wherever you can.
Well, I want to thank you for that challenge. We're going to have that on the show notes at ConsciousMillionaireShow.com. I want to thank all our listeners and friends in Paris, France, and Munich, Germany. But most of all, I want to thank you for showing up for yourself, not JV, not Richard, showing up to take another step forward, to become mega successful, to create the wealth you want, to live a life where you're making a difference that truly feels right for you, and you're happy and fulfilled. Now we're going to continue on. We're going to talk some about boundless optimism. And what I would be curious about, Richard, because you are a content creator, if there ever was one, what are some specific techniques? We've already talked about many, but if we could come up with two or three more techniques for how entrepreneurs can get into that boundless optimism state first thing in the morning and stay there throughout the day. Because it's one thing that you feel all motivated, you're all excited for the day, and then it's 30 minutes in and all this stuff has happened. Maintaining that state is critical if you want to play at your highest level.
Well, okay, let me tell you a secret. When people go to bed at night and they set their alarm, something like 70% of the population wakes up just before it goes off. Now, this means that we can give ourselves post-hypnotic suggestions. We either set a clock in our head, we set a clock on the end table, we set it on our phone. And when we go to sleep, while we're sleeping at night, this thing is running in the back of your mind to the point where it'll wake you up. Now, there's no reason to set a clock and say, I'm going to wake up at 8 o'clock without saying how you're going to wake up. Are you going to wake up tired? Because a lot of people go, I'm not a morning person, I'm going to wake up tired. Okay, that's what we refer to in my business as a bad post-hypnotic suggestion. You need to be able to visualize yourself bounding out of bed and asking the question, how can I succeed more today? What great things can I do? What can I get done? Have an excited voice in your head. You need to program that the night before so that when you wake up and you feel the warmth of the pillow, instead of thinking, oh, crap, I have to get up, you say to yourself, ooh, what opportunities? What can I accomplish today? How much more money can I make? How many new clients can I find? How can I get my employees motivated to get out there and do things? If you ask the right questions, you start getting the right answers. So you need to program it ahead of time so that instead of waiting until you wake up and then going, oh shit, and digging yourself out of a hole, best you don't dig the hole.
So you start up in a state where you're already in positivity, you're already optimistic. You're already
plan to be positive when you wake up and plan to speak to yourself in a positive tone of voice. Your tone of voice internally is as controllable as anything. A lot of people can't even control their voice on the outside. This is why people take voice lessons. Every time we do a trainer's training seminar, which is about charisma enhancement, it's about public speaking, we have to teach people to listen to their voice so they know what they sound like. A lot of your success is based on the tone of your voice. You start your show, you start it enthusiastically. You don't go on the microphone and go, oh crap, it's time for another show. And I have to listen to some idiot talk and smile. Oh crap. You know, this isn't what you say. Your voice tries to get people to be enthusiastic by sounding enthusiastic. Well, we have to do this with ourselves. If our internal voice doesn't sound enthusiastic, if we go, tonight I'm going to sleep really deep and I'm going to wake up excited, I'm going to wake up motivated. And when you wake up, have your tone of voice. Practice talking internally with an excited voice. Practice talking internally to make your voice excited, enthusiastic, boundlessly optimistic, and search of the answers and the solutions that will make your life work.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here listening to you and I'm thinking about curiosity because I do start every show that way. And I just genuinely have an anchor and start, right? Because we were talking before and that's not how I'm going to talk to you for 20 minutes. You'd probably leave the show. But I'm curious, you know, like, how do I create a great show? How do I create a great interview? I genuinely come to every show curious about the person I'm going to interview. I want to find out about them. Well, that makes it a lot more interesting to interview them if I'm curious about them.
If you're not curious, you can't find new things. And curiosity, you know, they go, killed the cat. Well, that's ridiculous. You know, the reason I've written 35 books is I get done with one and I start asking questions about something else. That's why they're all about different things. And, you know, my new book that's coming out is because people kept asking, they kept going, well, I know a lot of these NLP techniques, but I'm not really getting clients done. What is your strategy? So I've put together a book that has the rules of thumb that I use to be able to get clients from whatever place they're stuck to somewhere better. And in some of those cases, it's, you know, it's taking people who are great and making them better. I have a lot of athletes I've worked with over the years. They come in and they just want to be better at what they're doing. I have a lot of people that come in and they're in a slump of some kind, emotionally, psychologically, or whatever it is. And I teach them how to change their thinking so that they can learn to do the three most important things. The book, Get the Life You Want, has three sections to it. Getting over things, getting through things, and getting to things. And this is what the brain is designed to do. And if you don't understand enough about how your neurology works, you just go into loops and get stuck. And one of the best ways out of it is to be curious, to ask curious questions, and to wonder, that is to imagine how to get things done and to adapt in a functional way.
Richard, we've just got a couple of minutes left. Boundless Optimism's final shot, final things that if you're an entrepreneur, you're 6, 7, 8 figure. That's the majority of the entrepreneurs I work with. And you really want to double your business next year, because that's one of the things I ask entrepreneurs, just like, why would you want to be in the slow growth when the 10% are growing 50 to 100% or more every year? What would be a practical application of boundless optimism to create fast growth in your business?
Well, to begin with, you should want to double or quadruple your growth in half the time. That's a good formula for success. That if I always tell my students, I want you to quadruple your income and do it in half the time. That, so instead of people working by the hour and going, in order to become more successful, they double the number of hours they're working, they have to figure out how it can be done easier, quicker, faster, and more efficiently. That is the very definition of progress since the beginning of time. If you imagine how long it used to take to dial a telephone when it was a rotary phone, as opposed to now, the efficiency of this is what made cell phones successful. It wasn't just that you could carry them around and you had all this data, just the amount of time it saved. And if you ask the question, how can I do my business and get the same income in half the time, right? Then you have to come up with answers that make your business work faster. And by the very definition, it will grow faster.
Richard, I really appreciate your time being here. And I appreciate you showing up for yourself, showing up to take another step forward, showing up to create that wealth that you truly want by making a difference that's going to make you feel great inside and getting a life that's really happy and fulfilling for you. I look forward to connecting with you on the next Conscious Millionaire. And Dr. Richard Bandler, thank you so much for being our featured guest today.
Thank you, and y'all have a good day.
What if you could become an altar performer? operating at the top 1% of entrepreneurs. Find out how in the Conscious Millionaire Manifesto, Achieve Your Impossible. Inside, you'll discover the three keys to mastering mindset, strategy, and execution, so you scale faster, profit more, and step into your next level of performance. Download now. Go to consciousmillionaire.com/manifesto. It's time for you to step into your ultra-performer future.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Millionaire Media Podcast Radio Network. The host, producer, and owner of the show, distributors, and broadcast media make no claims that the strategies and information discussed in the show will result in profits or result in losses. The opinions and advice from the host guests do not necessarily represent those of their staff, management, or broadcasters of the show. No legal, accounting, or financial or health advice is made in the show. Your advice is counsel on matters related to financial investment, legal matters for advisors. Always consult your licensed health advisor prior to making any changes in your diet, test program, and implementing any health strategy discussed on the information provided may be situation. As always, take full responsibilities and actions you take in response.
Welcome to the Conscious Millionaire Show, Season 12, Episode Number 3155.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sally Hatcher. I'm a two-time deep tech founder turned venture capitalist. And today I'm going to talk with J.V. Crum about transformational entrepreneurship.
Welcome to Season 12 of the award-winning Conscious Millionaire Show, the world's number one podcast on conscious business and performance. With over 3,000 episodes and millions of listeners worldwide, this is where founders and entrepreneurs become ultra performers. I'm your host, J.V. Crum III. If you're ready to scale bigger, profit more, and create impact that truly matters, you're in the right place. This season, we're building a global movement of ultra performers, the new heroes of business who are breaking out to create bold new possibilities for the world. Subscribe now and share with your team, because this is the season you break out and become an ultra performer. What if you could become an ultra performer, operating at the top 1% of entrepreneurs? Find out how in the Conscious Millionaire Manifesto, Achieve Your Impossible. Inside, you'll discover the three keys to mastering mindset, strategy, and execution, so you scale faster, profit more, and step into your next level of performance. Download now. Go to consciousmillionaire.com/manifesto. It's time for you to step into your ultra-performer future.
Hello, this is JV, and I am totally excited you're here. If this is your first time checking out Conscious Millionaire, big warm welcome. I hope it's an amazing experience and you'll be back. If you're a longtime listener, thank you for checking us out, because today we have an amazing show because I've got a great featured guest. She is the co-founder and managing partner of Buff Gold Ventures. She's an investor, board member, serial entrepreneur, and startup accelerator faculty member. Her current work in venture capital stems from extensive experience founding and managing her own startups. Help me welcome, from Boulder, Colorado, Sally Hatcher. Sally, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, JD. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, you know, you and I met at a Silicon Flatirons event. I'm going to another one next week. They're so amazing. I can't decide, do I go because we get this amazing food for dinner, or do I go because I meet so many incredible people? But you and I stayed out of the event and just talked, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes. So it was great. And I was like totally enamored. So I'm curious, as when you did your first startup, why did you choose this direction, which has turned out to be amazing because you've done every piece of anything you could do as an entrepreneur?
Yeah. That's a great question. So I was originally in life, I was a management consulting with a consultant with a firm called McKinsey and Company.
Right.
And I had been to law school, right? So I was practicing law for the state, doing really white hat law that I thought was very good, very helpful to people, environmental work, cleaning up Superfund sites and water law. And my co-founder wanted to start a business making really wild physical equipment, optical heterodynes, which I'd never even heard of.
Right.
But I felt like this was something that could change the world. And I really enjoyed practicing law, planned a large career in that, and was on my way to be a partner. And I thought, I can always come back and make partner, but I will not have an idea for optical heterodynes. That's what I thought. at the very beginning of all this. I'm not going to have this idea, but I can build this company. So I did. I quit my job. And I, with my co-founder, we started this business, Precision Photonics. We were making optics and lasers for telecom systems. And I just jumped off the diving board saying, this is something new that I want to try. And I want to see if I can build something that nobody's seen before. And I want to build it out of my back bedroom, just like Hewlett Packard back in the day.
Or out of the garage, kind of like Steve Jobs, right?
It literally was a garage. Literally.
So you have shifted from founder to mentor to investor.
Yeah.
What has that journey taught you going through those different roles?
Yeah. Being a founder is hard. I think everyone, you know, sees the aspirational vision of, I want to build something cool. I want to change the world. Some people do it to make a ton of money, but everybody has a dream, right? And it's hard. So being a mentor allowed me to think really hard about, if I had help as a founder, what would the most useful help have been? How do I ask the right question? How do I, you talk a lot about mindset. So how do I put them in that mindset? How do I get them to a place where they can make the best decisions and be the most efficient in their resources? And then that transforms again now that I'm an investor, because I particularly focus with them on the money side of it. And they tend to hope that money grows on trees. And they tend to want my money, but not my mentoring advice. So yeah. So how do I help them see that both can be useful, both can be transformational, but also to myself, I ask a level up question all the time of, are you asking the one right question that is helpful and useful? Can you keep your fingers out of the pot? Let them do the lifting of building the company, but can you be the support system that they need when times get tough?
So, of course, this gives me a natural curiosity. Everyone listening today either is or wants to be a founder. They want to build their business. What is one universal question you have found that is useful for every founder, that every founder should be asking themselves this?
Yeah, you know, I think being a founder is a hard enough job that I think you need to ask, is there an easier way for me to live my life? Is there a day job that will be truly satisfying that I can spend a lot of time with my kids? Is there, you know, can I be satisfied with something different? And only if you think you can change the world and it is worth a lot of sacrifice and a lot of grit, then that's when you should jump in and do this.
So you should actually give yourself in a way, an out, but you should also look at the real risks involved, because being a founder is extremely risky. And I've thought a lot about that myself. I'm very clear that I'm a 7 on a scale of 10, and I'm happy being a 7. You know, it's like I didn't create that. It's just the way I am. I tell people, stay away from 9s and 10s. They're going to blow up. You certainly don't want a 3, because they're never going to be able to do it. But how have you found, where's that risk place that you found really works for founders? Because on the one hand, you have to be willing to iterate and put yourself out there on the limb. And at the same time, you have to be able to sleep at night. And that's a really practical thing. You have to be able to balance both of those.
That is a real balance. One of the mistakes that I made very early on is one of my very first investors. We talk about getting friends and family, sometimes fools, to invest in you. Right. Well, my earliest investor was my own dad. Mm-hmm. And he invested part of his retirement to help me get a hardware laser company off the ground way before this was done in Boulder, Colorado. There was no infrastructure or support network. He put his money in, and I didn't sleep for the next year worrying that I'd never be able to return that capital. So yeah, there is a balance on risk. I think having a healthy risk aversion is a very good thing. You need to double think a lot of decisions that you make as a founder. You know, hardware, I see people wanting to have huge capital equipment budgets all the time. It has to be made by me. We are the only people in the world who could figure out this fancy catalyzation process or, you know, miniaturization process. So there needs to be a balance that you enjoy the thrill of a chase, you enjoy the risk, you balance it with some reasoned decision making, and then you have to be able to draw the line. And, you know, for instance, for me, I wanted kids. So, and as a female founder, I had to draw the line that I was going to be home at dinner and be with my kids before I threw myself back into it after bedtime.
You know, it's interesting. In my first book, I have a section where I talk about risk, and I wanted to look at it in a way that's different than most people. And so I said, well, what really is risk? And I said, it's the probability you will not achieve the outcome you want. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, that's sobering. You go like, oh, so if it's more risky, I'm likely to fail. And I go, yep, that's statistically, that's exactly what it means. You have been involved in a lot of university startups. Can you discuss why you chose to do that and what you think is so important? Boulder has a tremendous university startup community, but why you think universities are a good place for entrepreneurs and especially students to get started?
Yep. So I love universities as centers of learning, centers of education. Like, we actually want to teach people. I love that process. I love the connection. I do love the energy of students. I'm a person who adores grad students. That's just my particular folks that I really connect with. But so I think that there's so much amazing technology that has been funded by huge federal investment. And a lot of that technology is developed at our universities. And there is then this impressive opportunity to take those technologies and to pair it with a first-class team to actually see if you can bring it to fruition. So I'm a person who's, you know, I think publishing white papers are terrific. It is how you pass knowledge along, but I want to know if you can change the world. So can we make a drug that reaches everybody? Can we make a diagnostic? Can we make methane emissions that help our oil companies pump cleaner gas? You know, these are big questions. That's what I want to solve. And a lot of that technology is invented in our universities. So it's just a great place to start, particularly with, you know, hard engineering, technology, scientific problems.
So at Conscious Millionaire, a lot of my clients, I help them unite. How do you make an impact and how do you make a profit? How do you bring those two together? What's your take on bringing those two together, and what's the relationship from your perspective?
So again, a great thing about being at a university is there is so much impact. So the impact that I tend to get all excited about is, tell me about your tech. Tell me how we're going to change the world with products that make the world cleaner, make your food healthier or safer, that make you live longer when you've got a disease. I love that, but look at all the other things that happen. You know, a lot of my founders are interesting, diverse people, first generation folks, you know, lots of women from India walk through my door with a firebrand personality and a just a drive to change the world. So I think that I am bringing in all kinds of new entrepreneurs. I think that I am also allowing the university itself to have a way to get all the innovation at the university out of the lab and into real world use. So at least three different ways. Plus maybe the key, the fourth, is the founders, the people I work with. You know, they are being changed by this work. They are growing by this work. I get the honor of helping them if I can, but walking with them along their path. So I'm changing people. And maybe that's why I do the universities, is four different impacts in one fell swoop.
And you have a lot of people who have enormous drive, because that's kind of one of the things we have when we're going to university. You know, I'm curious, we decided to title this Transformational Entrepreneurship. What is the difference in your mind between transformational entrepreneurship and transactional entrepreneurship?
You know, well, transformational is easy, right? Hard to do. Easy to dream. And maybe that's what I think of it as, is to transform is to be able to envision a world where something is different, something is better, something is easier. You know, that's transformational. Transactional entrepreneurship is maybe helping workflows go better, helping business move faster, helping get everyday business done, maybe helping, it can, and there can be a huge amount of value in that, in helping everyday transactions be easier. If I could help young moms who are trying to stay in the workforce, just have an easier time with laundry, groceries, getting kids to doctor's appointments, all of those to me are transactional, but critically important. I'm more work on the transformational side.
Right. It seems, listening to you and just my own reflections, that transformational, which is the world I live in as well, is we're uplifting even the consciousness and the quality of life. We're changing the game. Whereas transaction, you're playing the same conventional game. You're just maybe making it better, but nothing actually got improved in terms of the true consciousness of humanity.
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, to my point there, we didn't actually make it a lot easier for women to have children and stay in the workforce. We just gave them a lot of hacks. And good, honest, that's great. But transformational is something different, right? It really changes the world in a way that we're proud of, that we're responsive to. And we feel that, you know, we found value and self-respect in doing these jobs.
So what is the mindset from your perspective of a transformational entrepreneur?
Yep. I think that you've got to have, first of all, there has to be a goal that is worth not just getting out of bed for, but worth keeping on staying focused on all day, through the day, into the night, and you get up and do it the next day. So part of the mindset is just having a goal that's valuable enough to you that you're willing to sacrifice a lot for it. I then think that there's some amount of grit and resiliency. We've got Angela Duckworth and all of those folks who define that really well. So we'll let them do that. But I do think that you know, the grit part is so real that things just don't always go your way. And startups are choppy. The funding is a very big one, but there are, you know, the HR, there are 101 problems of things that go wrong that weren't even your core technology or your product idea. And so you've got to have the resiliency to work through, not just level out and ride above it, but you've got to work through those problems. So to me, that's the mindset you need, is that the goal is worth it. There, you know, that you have the resiliency to work through it. And then the feedback loop. Do you derive joy? And joy is not always being happy about it, right, but joy is the overall that the juice was worth the squeeze, that, you know, the view was worth the hike, and this job is worth doing even when it's hard.
And what I'm hearing underneath your statement of you got to have a goal is I'm thinking you've got to have something that's lofty, that inspires you, and that the money comes from the loftiness that you're achieving, not the money is the primary thing. And I'm all about building wealth. I mean, but I think wealth that comes from lofty ideas and lofty achievements and people's lives and humanity are better are really what inspires us as entrepreneurs. Because I think if I look out the next 30 years, so that's, you know, building a global nonprofit to create a more conscious society in 30 years, I think 80% of the change is going to come from entrepreneurs, that we're the ones that are really going to drive, do we become a more conscious place where everybody has more opportunity and everybody can live at a higher level or not. I think that will be determined by entrepreneurs. And I obviously have already cast my vote. So I think we're going to win. What in your mind is a transformational strategy? Could you give us an example again versus just something that's transactional?
Yeah. So for me, these days, now that I'm an investor, I think about this all in terms of what are the milestones that you need to meet in your business that are fairly short term. For me, that's between 12 and 24 months. Okay. What do you need to do to get your business to the next level? And how much cash do you need to reach those goals? So, you know, between the budgeting, between the working with your investors, you need to have a really good plan. And then executing to plan is super important. So, you know, if you don't have clarity around the plan, go back and strategize some more, but keep in mind this sort of timeline and keep focused on that, because in my world, that is what attracts investors. It's what keeps your investors focused. It helps you to keep the team alignment of your greater team, which is both inside your company and all the investors and advisors and everyone else that you pull in around it, your customers.
So we've addressed mindset and strategy. The third element, of course, is execution. Mm-hmm. How do you execute as a transformational entrepreneur? What does that look like?
You know what? These days, having tried a bunch of stuff, my best answer is that you do less. And I ran across a gal who worked at a really interesting accelerator doing innovation in Africa. And she's like, you know, I'm only going to get three things done today. So I just think about those three things and I make sure I execute on those. And I kind of looked at her in shock because, you know, I'm getting eight or nine things done a day. And the more that I looked at this, the more I've decided she was right. And if I can stay focused on a couple of key goals, I feel more satisfied. I also know that I have absolutely done the key things that had to happen. So when things slip, they're probably not first order. And I have done what had to do in order to move the ball down that strategy, down the field.
Well, I am both smiling and laughing inside, Sally, because I'm in the process, and I might come back and talk to you about this, of putting together a SaaS business that's about productivity. And I'll just say the number three comes into play. And that when I'm working with my clients, we might be going, okay, where do you want to be in a year? But I said, we're going to break that down into 90 days, because I just have noticed people get a lot more done with short term. But yes. Here's the conversation I have with everyone. And it is a funny conversation. I go, I need to explain that we're only going to have one number one priority, and that number one means they're not 10.
Right.
Right. Number one includes only one, but we're going to accomplish it.
Yeah.
And it's the one that will make the most difference. But just, you know, the process of making the decision what that number one is yep. in and of itself a really valuable exercise.
Yeah.
We're here with Sally Hacker. We're going to be back in 60 seconds. You want to stay tuned? We've got an amazing 24-hour challenge. We've got the lightning run coming up, and we'll be right back in 60 seconds.
What if you could become an Ulta performer? Operating at the top 1% of entrepreneurs. Maybe you're at six figures and ready for your first million. Or you've built a seven-figure business and now it's time to leap into eight. The Conscious Millionaire Manifesto, Achieve Your Impossible, is your blueprint. Inside, you'll discover the three keys to mastering mindset, strategy, and execution. The levers that transform entrepreneurs into unstoppable forces who scale bigger, profit more, and create impact that truly matters. I'm J.V. Crum III, founder of Conscious Millionaire, author, and after two exits and $75 million in revenues, I've written the manifesto for founders like you, leaders who know they're meant for more and are ready to achieve it right now. And as a listener to the Conscious Millionaire Show, you get special access today. So act now. Go to consciousmillionaire.com/manifesto. That's consciousmillionaire.com/manifesto. Again, go right now to consciousmillionaire.com/manifesto. Download your manifesto today and step into your Ulta performer future.
Welcome back. I'm J.V. Crum III. I'm the host of the Conscious Millionaire Show. My featured guest today is Sally Hacker. We're having an incredible time. If you have just joined us, be sure that you listen to all of this. If you're on the radio show, go to consciousmillionaireshow.com. Well, I want to stop this moment and just say how much I appreciate you. You are the most important part of this show, because Sally and I have met. We'll probably see each other next week, but our conversation without you is not a podcast. You're the podcast. You're the listener. You're the one who makes it most important. And I want to thank all of our listeners and friends in Chattanooga, Tennessee. By the way, I've been to the aquarium there. It's a great aquarium. I just want to recommend that. And Petaluma, Italy. And now it's time for the 24-hour challenge. Sally, what's the challenge you have for everyone listening today?
Okay, JV. So I'm listening to you and thinking about this whole thing of having one important goal during the day. I think the problem for me is that I get up and get going in the morning with all that energy, and I immediately get distracted on the fast things I can check off my to-do list, the quick errand that I can run, the dishwasher I can fix really quick before I settle down to get something substantive done. I can be distracted. So my hack for all of this is to do box breathing, and I do it in my car. So there are lucky days when I get to bike to work for my commute, but on all the other days, I'm in my car anyway. So I take the time to breathe. And the way that I do that is I take a breath in and I count in my head to five as I breathe in. Count to five. And then you hold that breath for five more counts. You breathe out for five more counts. You could hear my voice relax right there. And then you hold the breath out for five more counts. And you repeat that a couple of times as you sit in the traffic, you watch the cars, you watch the stoplight, and then you get yourself back on track. What's the key thing I need to do today? What are the only three things that I'm going to get done today? What's important? And you reset yourself to make sure that you're focused on the top fundamental thing that's going to actually move the meter for the day.
Well, I love that. And I highly recommend it. And I've done box breathing, so I understand this, and it's a really valuable concept. Well, folks, it's time for the lightning round. And the first question is really about you and your mindset. What's the performance mindset that you've created because you've accomplished so much, but allows you to discover your best business opportunities, which for you could be your best investment opportunities?
You asking me or are you asking
me? I'm asking you.
I'm busy thinking about everybody who's listening to this and wondering, I want to hear what they want to do, right? So for me, the mindset that I get myself into is trying to listen a lot faster than I judge, and that I give feedback, because I tend to be a yapper. I am very fast with forming an opinion and giving a great answer. And sometimes they're right, but I am so much better off if I get myself in the listening path of just trying to really understand the point that somebody else is putting across and making sure I'm getting everything about it, rather than just a super snap judgment on where I think they're going.
I'm laughing because both of us went to law school, and I'm thinking you must have sat on the front row. This was my second graduate degree, so I'd already played the game once, but I was running a 50-person company full-time while going to law school full-time. And I discovered that if you sat on the back row, and I'd always been a first-row person, that they never called on me. And it was good because a lot of times I had not read the case. You know, I would take 3 weeks off and study for finals, and I was good. But during the semester, I was not so good. And I'm thinking, well, you were on the front row where you could answer all those questions, and I never wanted to be called on.
Marius,
in either your own business, and you've worked with so many businesses, either way, what's a strategy you've used to scale businesses?
Yeah. You absolutely have to find product market fit. So at this point, I have worked with hundreds of companies, typically deep tech companies or hard tech, however you want to define it, to figure that out. Because I think that we typically have some great idea. We think that we have a solution to the world's problems. We just then go searching for a problem to solve with our solution. And that's just backwards. So it's super important to back up and put the horse back in front of the cart, figure out the problem you want to solve, and then what's the solution that will best fit that problem.
You know, our belief structures determine, you know, I'm working on the new book, Achieve Your Impossible. Your belief structure is going to determine whether you look out and you see something as impossible, or you look at it and you see it as possible. What's a belief that's allowed you to achieve at your highest level?
You know, it's not a business belief, but I, had kids come home and tell me about superpowers and people having superpowers. I think one of my superpowers is joy. It doesn't mean happiness. It means a wellspring from inside of a sense of the opportunity and possibility of life. And that ability to have it within myself, to share it with other people, that is really actually what spurs my entrepreneurship and helps me focus on that goal of what I really want to change and obtain.
Well, you know, you've brought up joy several times, and all of us in this kind of mentoring or coaching role with people have pieces of work we do. One of mine is helping people discover their deeper purpose. And what I have found is that when you get to that deep purpose, you have deep joy.
Yeah.
And the happiness you've referred to, I think of that as a surface emotion, but I think joy is our deepest emotion as a human being.
Yep.
That when we're living in that deep purpose of why we're on the planet, we naturally feel deeper joy. You know,
it's a state of being, right?
It is a state of being. Mm-hmm. We were discussing that I currently am meditating 2 hours a day, an hour in the morning, an hour in the evening. That's part of now my personal practice. What's one of your personal practices that helps you be a true ultra performer?
I make sure after I spent enough years kind of overdoing it in my startups, I started changing my mindset and saying, I need abundance right now. And I need to make sure that I am enjoying the life I've got, not just this life that I'm dreaming about, and not future reward. So I make sure that I am taking enough time. I scull in the morning on my boat. I paddleboard. I invite my friends over. I go biking through my neighborhood down to the little local lake, and I play tennis. So doing all these things to make sure that, you know, I am having a rich life right this moment, even while I'm trying to scale.